And now another no-brainer money-saving tip from Progressive.
Marcus, what happened?
I was changing my oil and I spilled some on the floor.
Oh, well, use these $50 bills to wipe it up.
Perfect. Got any more?
Yeah, take a couple hundred.
Stop. Instead of using money, use an old rag. And here's a better tip from Progressive on how not to waste money. Don't pay too much for car insurance. Drivers who switch and save could save hundreds. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary.
When a young Indiana mother leaves work on New Year's Eve, she never makes it to the celebration she planned to attend. Instead, she disappears along with the final hours of the waning year. Investigators examine a variety of potential suspects, including an ex-boyfriend, an older man living a double life, and a convicted killer next door, in this episode of Last Seen Alive. Thanks for listening to Last Seen Alive. I'm your host, Leah, crime analyst by day and true crime storyteller by night.
And I'm your co-host, Scott.
Marina Bolter was last seen alive on December 31st, 2014. At just 18 years old, that New Year's Eve was her very first as a newly minted adult. Unfortunately, it's possible that it was also her last. Marina, an energetic child often affectionately referred to as a little tornado by her mom, had been raised in both Indiana and Ohio. Her father lived in Ohio while her mother's home was in Indiana. During her teen years, Marina chose to move out of her father's Ohio home and into her mother's in Bloomfield, Indiana, a very small town located about an hour and a half's drive southwest of the state's capital city. The move allowed Marina to spend more time with her mother and grandfather, which she enjoyed. Like many faced with an interstate move during the high school years, though, she found the change pretty challenging. She'd always been an avid bookworm and an excellent student, but her enthusiasm for academics waned somewhat after the move. However, that didn't stop her from bouncing back and earning her GED. She wanted to continue her education at a collegiate level to set herself up educationally for a career in the culinary arts. Specifically, she aspired to become a pastry chef. Instead of diving into a college or culinary arts school right away, though, she decided to enter the workforce and accumulate some experience at a local grocery store's deli. This decision was a very practical one for Marina, especially since she became pregnant and had delivered a baby boy at age 17. She named her son Landon and, by all accounts, was an attentive mother. The father of her child was a local man named DJ Lockhart, who, at age 20, was several years her senior. After their son was born, Marina continued living with her family, and it was a full house. Not only did she share it with her mother, but also several siblings and her grandfather. With the addition of Landon, there were four generations of the family living under one roof, which was fine, till it wasn't.
I imagine it would get pretty cramped pretty quick.
I'm not sure how big the house was, so I suspect the same, but I'm not totally sure. But when Landon was just 4 months old, something happened in the house that would dramatically alter the family dynamics forever. Marina had a sister who struggled with substance abuse and who was wanted by police at the time, reportedly for some kind of drug-related charge. She showed up at the family house in Bloomfield where she got into a fight with her boyfriend and the fight turned physical. Now, to clarify, I mean that the sister got into a fight with her own boyfriend, not with Marina's boyfriend. Marina had nothing to do with the fight, and yet it ended up costing her dearly. During the altercation, someone threw an object and it struck Landon in the head, causing a traumatic brain injury and a brain bleed. Landon received emergency medical care and survived the injury, but Child Protective Services stepped in and Marina lost custody of her son. Marina's grandfather was also injured as a result of the altercation.
Okay, first off, that's a really sad way to start off the episode.
Doesn't get any better from here. This is going to be a profoundly sad episode.
Also, it must have been like a rather heated altercation for multiple different parties that were presumably uninvolved to be affected and injured.
Yes. Now, needless to say, Marina was heartbroken and absolutely furious with her sister. According to the profile on Marina's case on uncovered.com, This tragic event deeply divided the family, and the rift it caused is still present. Baby Landon's accidental injury proved to be the first in a series of tragedies that ultimately ended in the family losing multiple other members, including Marina. After baby Landon was placed with a foster family, Marina immediately threw herself into efforts to regain custody. She continued working hard at the deli with the goal of obtaining her own apartment, a secure environment for herself and her son, where his safety wouldn't be threatened by the actions of others. An old family friend stepped in and offered Marina assistance, helping her to get her own apartment. This was a big step in Marina's plans to regain custody. By the end of 2014, she was reportedly well on her way to achieving her ultimate goal of bringing Landon home. And a quick note here, Marina did not share the apartment with Landon's father, DJ. It was her residence alone because her and DJ's relationship was a rocky one, perhaps best described as on again, off again. And at the time of Marina's disappearance, it was definitely in the off again stage. Marina wanted to move on. DJ, however, seemed interested in trying to win her back and make their relationship work. When Marina finished her shift at the deli a little before 6 p.m. on December 31st, DJ showed up unexpectedly in the parking lot of the grocery store, accompanied by two male friends, and approached Marina. This encounter was an unwelcome one as far as Marina was concerned. When he approached her, she was on her phone with that family friend who helped her obtain the apartment, and she reportedly said, "Oh shit, it's DJ." Marina then ended the phone call, promising to call back later after she determined what DJ wanted. It turned out to be a promise she never kept, one most likely that she never had a chance to keep. It was the final day of December, and the sun had already set. There in the parking lot, DJ asked Marina to attend a New Year's Eve party with him that night, and he also wanted to give her a ride home from work. She declined both offers. She already had plans to attend a different New Year's Eve party, and she didn't want to ride with DJ and his friends, which didn't go over well with DJ. According to Uncovered.com, multiple witnesses saw Marina and DJ arguing over the matter of which party she would attend and with who. Marina ultimately refused to give in and left not with DJ, but with another man who'd offered her a ride. It was dark and cold, and Marina didn't have a car. She'd been on her feet all day at the deli, and it was either accept the ride or walk home. She chose the former.
So that answered my first question, which was, how did we know that's what happened with the witnesses? But that raises a second question, which is, do we know who this mysterious stranger is?
Well, reportedly, he was a regular customer at the deli counter where she worked, and police haven't publicly shared his name, although they do know who he is. All we, the public, know is that he was a heavyset, middle-aged white man who wore glasses. He was driving a Mercury Milan that was some kind of metallic color, perhaps gold, champagne, or silver. He'd parked his car in a gas station lot directly across the street from the grocery store lot, and DJ witnessed Marina getting into the man's car after they concluded their argument over the party. And that was the very last known time that Marina was seen. Marina never made an appearance at the party she'd planned to attend that evening, and even more alarmingly, she didn't show up to work the next day. Her co-workers were immediately concerned. All of them unanimously agreed that it was unlike Marina to be a no-call, no-show to work. In fact, it was so unlike her that her co-workers actually called the police and reported their concerns. And then they called her mom, Tressie, as well, and Tressie immediately suspected that something wasn't right. Nobody who knew Marina could imagine her bailing on a scheduled shift without a good reason, and there was no doubt that she'd call if she couldn't make it in, unless, of course, she was unable to call for some reason. After hearing the concerns of Marina's co-workers and family, police went to her apartment in order to see if she was there. They found the door unlocked, but there was no one inside, nor was there any sign of a struggle. The apartment looked totally normal, and they noted that Marina's purse, keys, and phone were not there. It was as if she'd either come home from work and then left again, or perhaps had never made it home from work at all. Later, her mom, Tressie, would note that there were no signs of her having gotten ready for a party lying around the house. And if you recall, Tressie often called Marina her little tornado. So she said that if she had come home and gotten ready for this party she was so excited for, there would have been evidence of that lying around. So Tressie thinks that perhaps she never made it home. Obviously, this raises a lot of questions about the man who gave Marina a ride, such as, Who was he? Did he have a criminal history? And if so, what kind? And did he have anything to do with Marina's disappearance?
My other question on top of that is, I'm pretty sure the answer is going to be no, by the way. He's not also the family friend.
No, different people.
Okay, because I was going to say that might lead to evidence to him having access to the apartment. So
yeah, no, he is not the family friend. Two totally separate individuals. The last person to see someone alive is always a person of interest when it comes to the inevitable investigation. And that's perhaps doubly true when that person is a middle-aged man offering a beautiful teenage girl a ride. Because let's be honest, his motivation almost certainly had more to do with Marina's youthful good looks than with any sort of altruistic motivation. Naturally, investigators wanted to speak to the man. There was a problem, though. No one knew who he was. They publicly requested repeatedly that the man come forward and contact investigators, and after 3 long weeks, he finally did. Now, investigators questioned the man, who, again, hasn't been named publicly. He claimed that Marina had accepted his offer of a ride home, but hadn't wanted him to know exactly where she lived. Therefore, at her request, he dropped her off in the parking lot of an old, permanently closed pizza place that was near her apartment. Her plan had been to walk to her apartment from there, which, unbeknownst to him, was pretty much literally right across the street. Now, whether or not she made it to her apartment, he claimed, he couldn't say because he'd driven away after dropping her off. When Marina's mom, Tressie, learned of the man's claims, she thought that asking the man to drop her off at a location near her apartment in order to conceal her address sounded exactly like something Marina would do. That part of the story sounded realistic enough, but as for the rest, who knew? Police asked the man to submit to a polygraph examination, and he did. He passed, but of course, polygraph exams are notoriously unreliable, so that is not particularly meaningful. What was perhaps most concerning about this man was that he did have a criminal record. In an ID Channel documentary, a reporter stated that she'd been told that the man had a criminal history that included abduction and attempted rape.
Yike.
Yeah, mega yikes. And that reporter didn't know his name, and so she could not independently verify that information. Nor could I, for the same reason. But it's in the documentary, so take that for what it's worth.
If we don't know who they are, we can't be 100% sure it's accurate. But if it does, it paints a pretty bleak picture.
Right? Now, regardless of his criminal past, he did have an alibi for that night. And according to Uncovered.com, investigators have determined that he is not a suspect in Marina's disappearance. Now, given that he was an alleged sex offender offering a ride to a teenager young enough to be his daughter, you may have some reservations about him reportedly being written off by investigators. I mean, after all, what are the odds, really, that a criminal would convince her to get into his vehicle, end up being the last person to interact with her, and ultimately have nothing whatsoever to do with her disappearance?
I mean, it would be a truly reformed individual, given what he was accused of.
Maybe. The odds to me that this would all just be a big coincidence seem pretty low. But Marina's case is just, it's one of those odd cases where you might as well just forget about the odds. Because this man was just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to suspiciously creepy men with strange connections to the case. The entire story is just a circus of creeps. It is frankly incredible.
Well, I will say that if the investigators so quickly and easily determined that he wasn't involved, it would lead me to assume that there was somebody more interesting that they found pretty quickly.
That is very possibly true. Now, before we move on, though, we would be remiss not to mention another man in Marina's life, and that, of course, is the father of her child, DJ. Although DJ wasn't the last person to interact with Marina, they did have that argument right before she got into the other man's car. And as we all know, statistically speaking, women are harmed more often by men with whom they have close relationships than by strangers or mere acquaintances. It's also worth mentioning that about a month beforehand, Marina had filed a paternity suit against DJ. Could DJ and perhaps his friends have caught up with Marina at her apartment or on the street before she reached it? Many women have died at the hands of their partners shortly after extricating themselves from abusive relationships. In fact, the 12 months following a breakup with an abusive partner are even more dangerous to women than the time actually spent in the abusive relationship. As for whether or not Marina and DJ's relationship had been an abusive one, according to multiple sources, including that Uncovered.com profile on the case, it was. Multiple family members, including Marina's father, have told media that they believed him to be abusive toward Marina. For example, Marina's dad, John, appeared in a documentary on the case by Investigation Discovery and said that he'd been told that DJ was abusive and very controlling of Marina. Tressie, Marina's mom, has stated that despite that, she didn't think that DJ would harm Marina. However, Marina's sister-in-law, Ashley, with whom she was close, has stated that she believes the possibility of DJ having something to do with Marina's disappearance has never been off the table. In fact, in an article by journalist Tia Irish for the Greene County Daily World, Ashley said that DJ had broken Marina's collarbone in the past.
That's a pretty serious allegation.
Absolutely. Huge red flag, if true. Marina's older brother, David, lived in another state far away from the Midwest at the time of Marina's disappearance. However, he told the ID channel that he'd heard horrific stories of DJ's alleged abuse of Marina. Those stories included tales of him strangling her, locking her outside naked in the cold, and even attempting to force her into prostitution. Whether those claims are true, I can't say. Additionally, Marina's dad, John, told the ID channel that DJ had once told Marina that if she ever left him, he'd kill her and bury her in the woods where no one would ever find her.
So you'd have to do some serious investigation work to confirm those. But not only that, you'd also have to do some pretty strong investigative work to confirm that he wasn't involved, if any of that turned out to be true.
Right. Now, I don't know whether there had ever been any police reports filed where officers were called to a domestic dispute or domestic violence incident between Marina and DJ. I don't know. So the question is, could the alleged violence have escalated? Could DJ have decided that if he couldn't have Marina, no one could? Well, according to some sources, probably not.
Anything would push him towards an escalation, I'd assume. Seeing her get into a car with another man after that argument would probably be a pretty good trigger.
Yeah, I agree. And I say probably not, not because his alleged behavior wasn't full of red flags. It certainly was. But rather because, according to that Uncovered.com article I mentioned, investigators don't believe DJ is a suspect in Marina's disappearance.
So that's two shady individuals, potentially, that investigators have somehow figured out weren't involved.
Allegedly. Now, I haven't seen like the chief of police or the detective come out and publicly say, hey, they definitely didn't do it. So take it with a little bit of salt. For the record, DJ was cooperative with the investigation and active in search efforts for Marina. However, he himself was killed just 6 weeks after Marina disappeared, and we'll discuss his death later on. For now, let's talk about the investigation into Marina's disappearance. It wasn't just Marina's family who searched for her. Indiana State Police also conducted their own professional search. An article by Laura Lane for the Herald Times states that investigators found some kind of evidence during a helicopter search conducted shortly after Marina's disappearance. However, in order to protect the integrity of the investigation, they've never publicly disclosed the nature of the evidence. All we really know is that it's presumably something that you could see from a helicopter. It does make me wonder about that statement that DJ made about killing her and burying her in the woods, and it makes me think, could what they saw have been some kind of disturbed earth? But ultimately, I don't know, just a guess. In the early stages of the investigation, investigators also wanted to review Marina's phone records for possible clues, but found that instead of having a regular phone plan, she used a pay-as-you-go phone that she'd purchased from a local Walmart. And that totally messed up their plans to obtain her phone records. It was actually Tressie, Marina's mom, not police, who managed to make sure that investigators were able to get their hands on the data they needed. She did this by approaching a Walmart manager and convincing them to help police. That manager was able to access the phone data and identify where and when Marina's phone last pinged off of a cell tower.
The manager?
Yes, a Walmart manager.
I think we need to spend a little bit of time on that, because if I use those kind of phones, which I don't, that would be highly concerning to me that a manager would have access to that information.
Yeah. Think of all the drug dealers out there and not knowing that their lives or their burner phones are in the palm of a Walmart manager's hand.
I'm shocked they would have any access. And I'm also shocked that they would know how to do that.
That second part was the most shocking to me. Have you ever met the manager of anything ever? Do you know how many people don't even know how to obtain security footage?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, don't ask me how it works because I don't know. But that's what happened. What I can tell you is that that final ping had occurred just 10 minutes after Marina had left the grocery store parking lot on the evening of her disappearance. Investigators haven't publicly stated where the phone last pinged, but given the time frame, it couldn't have been far away. The fact that Marina's phone stopped communicating with cell towers 10 minutes after she left her work parking lot indicates that her phone either happened to run out of battery then and powered down, or it was deliberately shut off, either by her or someone else. The latter perhaps seems the more likely scenario, but unfortunately, we don't know for sure what happened. To the best of my knowledge, Marina's phone remains missing to this day, just like her. Investigators also discovered that some things had been taken from her apartment, after all. Marina was known to keep journals in which she consistently chronicled her life, and someone had taken them.
Well, that just piques my interest because presumably those would be left at the house.
Yes, someone had gone into her apartment and taken them, which has personal written all over it, right?
Yeah.
And whoever did it, they also did it without tearing the place apart looking for them. It seems like they either saw them out in the open or knew they were there and went to find them. Who this journal thief was, I don't know, but raises some obvious questions like the ones we just discussed. What was in those journals that made them so desperate to hide them?
Could they be taken as a trophy? That's another thing I was thinking of.
Yeah, I think that's another possibility, but I think it's less likely than the first possibility. For one, they would have had to go to Marina's house, which means they knew where she lived. They were in there and they found the journals. They were lying out in the open and they didn't take anything else. Since Marina was never found, if they harmed her, they would have had to get her out of the apartment if they were in there with her without being seen. Speaking of Marina's apartment, though, investigators made another discovery. There was a convicted murderer living in her apartment complex. And not just any convicted killer, either. A man who'd committed unthinkable crimes against another young mother. More on that next.
Help your small business thrive and stay connected with the Comcast Business Complete Connectivity Solution. It's the largest, fastest, reliable network. Advanced gig speed Wi-Fi and cyber threat protection. Get started for just $40 a month for 12 months with no annual contract when you add mobile. Plus, ask how to get up to a $750 prepaid card. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
Ends 2/21/2023. Restrictions apply. Requires EcoBill and AutoPay. New 100 megabits per second internet and Comcast Business Security Edge customers only. Equipment taxes and fees extra. After 12 months, regular rates apply. Gig internet required for gig Wi-Fi.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
And now, back to Marina's story. Investigators found that 56-year-old registered sex offender and convicted murderer Vernon Gale Briner had been released from prison in 2012 and had been living next door to the apartment Marina had recently moved into ever since. And Vernon Gale Briner's crimes had been truly monstrous. To be honest, I'm deeply disturbed by the fact that he was let out of prison at all. Allow me to explain why. Back in 1976, 25-year-old mother of two Elizabeth Walsh, who went by Betsy, was studying at Aurora College in Illinois. She loved children and had a natural knack for working with them, and so she was studying to become a teacher. She planned to earn her degree and then return to where she'd previously been living in West Virginia to teach. The area was underserved educationally, and she wanted to help change that. Her husband was a social worker, and together, they believed they could make a real difference in their community. However, Betsy would never have a chance to live out her dreams. While attending classes in Illinois, in order to make ends meet for her family, she took a part-time job on campus as a nighttime security guard. One of her co-workers, another security guard, was then 20-year-old Vernon Gale Briner, who was also a student. One night in 1976, when they were both working, Briner cornered Betsy and physically attacked her before ultimately dragging her into a bathroom where he sexually assaulted her and beat her to death. Her boss found her body the following morning, nude from the waist down and riddled inside and out with wounds. The bathroom in which her killer had abandoned her remains was smeared with blood. Because of the profoundly selfish actions of a murderous sexual predator, Betsy's children, who were only 1 and 3 years old at the time, were left to grow up without their mother, who had loved them deeply. And her husband, with whom she'd planned to change their small community, was left a widower. A few years later, Briner gave an interview from behind bars in which he stated the following, quote, "I'm working to get where I could go home, but with some of the attitudes that I have right now, I'm sure that another attack would happen. I'm not capable of dealing with females yet. I get frustrated very easily," end quote. Big incel energy before that term was even a thing. Not capable of dealing with females yet?
It's very, yeah, incel. There's a lot there.
So this murderous gem of a human being was released from prison in 2012, 36 years after he brutally raped and beat Betsy Walsh to death, leaving her family permanently devastated. He called himself an old man at the time of his release. But in reality, he was only in his 50s and was a very large man, more than capable, most likely, of physically overpowering, say, a petite teenager like Marina, who weighed a little more than 100 pounds. When investigators questioned Briner, he offered an alibi, which was that he'd been at work on the night of Marina's disappearance. Investigators followed up on this and found multiple co-workers of his who actually confirmed his alibi. And even better, they were able to locate surveillance footage that proved Briner had, in fact, been at work that night.
Okay, so then why are we still considering him?
I'm going to be honest with you. Every single person in this story who you hear about and think, oh, surely they're a suspect, ends with, and then investigators moved on. And in the case of Vernon Gale Briner, after seeing that security footage, to the best of my knowledge, investigators moved on.
Okay.
Like I said, there's just an astounding number of creeps involved in this story. And you know there's no way they're all in on it. But also, you hear about the things they've done and you think, how is this person not in on it?
Yeah, like, there's such a strong potential lead and then it's
nope,
a coincidental incident. And I don't tend to believe in coincidence, so this is very awkward for me.
Yes. It's just one of those instances where you can't help but think, what are the odds? And the story is full of those instances. Truly, Marina was apparently surrounded by an unusually high number of predators. Moving on, remember that family friend who helped Marina get an apartment of her own?
I've been questioning when he would show up.
Yes, he. He indeed. Well, big surprise, I'm sure. That person, who was in fact a man well into his 30s, was seemingly motivated by more than simple kindness.
I'm not surprised at this point.
According to a case timeline on Uncovered.com, Marina and 35-year-old Toby Deem began an intimate relationship a couple of months before her disappearance. Deem, who owned a local motorcycle repair shop, was a longtime friend of Tressie, Marina's mom, at least until this started happening. Apparently, though, when Marina turned 18, Deem became more interested in initiating a relationship with her than he was in maintaining his friendship with her mother. Tressie knew about the relationship and reportedly did not like it, but Marina was a newly minted adult and didn't even live at home anymore. There wasn't much Tressie could do about the situation. Speaking of the situation, it was complicated by the fact that Deem was married. So his relationship with Marina wasn't just a fling with a significant age difference. It was an affair.
Big yig.
Yeah. So Deem helped Marina get set up with that apartment, which was conveniently located just blocks from his own home and from that motorcycle shop he owned. And on New Year's Eve, the party Marina had planned to attend was Deem's party, which he would be hosting in his home along with his wife, who reportedly was unaware of the affair. What could go wrong?
Continuing yike.
Of course, Marina never made it to that party. Could Deem have been the reason? He was dating Marina at the time of her disappearance, which, statistically speaking, made him far more likely to harm her than any stranger would be. And we know that he had a key to her apartment. As for what his possible motivation could hypothetically have been, well, his relationship with Marina was a secret, one that I assume he would have been motivated to keep. Also, when it comes to Marina's diaries, we can assume that they almost certainly contained information on her relationship with Deem. Naturally, if Deem played a role in her going missing, those journal entries could potentially be damning in the wake of her disappearance. It's easy to imagine him wanting them gone. He perhaps had more potential reason to fear the discovery of their contents than any other person in any other hypothetical scenario in this story.
I mean, the only two with a vested interest in those potentially vanishing that I can see would be him and DJ.
Right. I had a similar thought. And here's the thing, though. Her troubles with DJ were not a secret. So I don't know if there's anything she could have written in the diary that would sound or look worse than the things I described earlier in the episode that were known to her family. With that being said, even without the journals, investigators did learn of Deem's affair with Marina. And of course, they questioned him in relation to her disappearance. According to Uncovered.com, Deem cooperated with the investigation. He's never been charged with any crime in connection to Marina's disappearance. But then again, nor has anyone else.
I was waiting for the, and then the investigators moved on.
And then the investigators moved on.
Thank you.
Now, when it comes to the men in Marina's life, there's one more I would be remiss not to mention. And that's the man who killed the father of her child, DJ. His name was Michael, and 6 weeks after Marina's disappearance, DJ showed up at his home unannounced, stormed inside, and confronted him in a rage. And the reason he did this was because he believed that Michael had had a relationship of some sort with Marina at some point in the past. Whether Michael actually had ever been involved with Marina in any capacity or whether it was a mere rumor, I don't know. But either way, DJ believed it was true, which caused him to become intensely angry. He threw himself at Michael, knocked him to the kitchen floor, and began beating him. And Michael responded by stabbing DJ with a knife. After inflicting the wound, he applied pressure to it and called 911, but the wound was fatal. A judge determined that Michael had acted in self-defense, and therefore he wasn't charged with any crime in relation to DJ's death. Baby Landon, who was still living with foster parents, lost both of his parents within 6 weeks of each other. His foster parents eventually became his adoptive parents, so he has a stable family, but of course, that doesn't erase the tragedy of losing his biological parents. And speaking of deaths in the family, several years later, in March of 2021, Marina's mom, Tressie, also died at the age of just 46 without ever learning what had become of her daughter. In the wake of Marina's disappearance, Tressie had been extremely active in advocating for her, searching high and low, maintaining a Facebook page, putting up posters, and raising money for billboards. She even dyed her hair a vivid purple, Marina's favorite color, in remembrance of her. However, no answers had come from those efforts, and the unrelenting heartbreak took a toll. She struggled with substance abuse, and whether or not that played a role in her death, I don't know. But the lack of answers certainly couldn't have made it easy for her to live without knowing where her child was. And the tragedy is compounded by the fact that she passed away without her questions being answered. Today, Marina is remembered by the rest of her family, who are still actively seeking answers. Her father, brothers, uncles, at least one cousin, and others came to Indiana from all over to search for her, and they still hope that she will one day be found. Her sister-in-law, Ashley, has been especially instrumental in raising public awareness of her case. Perhaps the only thing needed for Marina's loved ones to finally receive answers is for someone with information to come forward. If you have any information about the disappearance of Marina Bolter, please call the Indiana State Police at 317-232-8248 or the Bloomfield Police Department at 812-384-4411.
That's all for this episode of Last Seen Alive. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Make sure you check out our website, lastseenalivepodcast.com, for photos from the story and links to the sources we used to write it. While you're at it, follow us on Insta and Twitter at LSA Podcast. New episodes of Last Seen Alive go live every other Monday. See you then. And if you think bringing unsolved cases like Marina's to the public's attention is important, please take a moment to rate or review Last Seen Alive and tell your friends to check us out too. We really would appreciate it. Last Seen Alive is written and researched by you, Leah. Audio engineering and editing is provided by me, Scott, in association with our podcast production partner, Podcast Post Production. Check them out for all of your podcasting needs at podcastpostproduction.com.